speak truth. You can speak truth. All you have to do is submit your will to God, and you'll be infallibly correct on everything. And, of course, I give my same challenge all the time. Show me one thing wrong with Catholicism, and I'll leave it immediately. I swear that by my soul. And I point out that although I've been on your show a number of times, and occasionally we get, shall we say, disagreeable callers, that's people who disagree with me, and I always give my telephone number, not one of those disagreeing callers has ever called me, except for that guy Kurt we both know, and he admitted he was wrong. And none of the Protestant non-Catholic listenership in your area has ever raised up a champion to confront me face-to-face in an open debate, because they all know they're wrong, and they all know I'm right. Well, so much for tax, Pat. Shall we get to the subject?
Well, Vin, you heard the phone call from the disgruntled caller yesterday. I tell you what, upon hearing this caller, the thing that I immediately thought of was either he is a former Catholic who's fallen away from the Church, possibly somebody who at one time have been either a priest or have studied in a seminary or studied theology extensively, because I'm sure that you could tell from a few of the statements he made that he is at least knowledgeable when it comes to the Catholic Church and its past. A couple of questions that he brought up I want you to address to the listening audience here.
Sure,
or answer.
Let me make one comment.
Go right ahead.
I think you, and I have to emphasize this, this is only my opinion, but my opinion is usually better than others because I am the expert in the field. Almost everybody who leaves the Catholic Church leaves it because of sin of the flesh. Everybody leaves the Catholic Church because of sins, but almost always it's a sin of the flesh. This guy sounds like a whole bunch of other people I've spoken to. What apparently happened, and I'm guessing, of course, but this is very likely, is the man is married. Either he's turned his wife off, or maybe because of some reason they can't have sex anymore. He fell in love with his secretary, chased her around the office. She gave in to him. So now he's looking for some theological justification to satisfy his lust.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, what he does, and this is a standard liberal technique, is instead of admitting he's wrong, he attacks you for being righteous, and he accuses your righteousness of error. So therefore, in a sort of reverse Freudian-type Marxist logic, since you oppose sex out of marriage, you hold sex as dirty. Since sex isn't dirty, I can chase the secretary and have sex with her on the table because my wife's gotten a little fat, and the hell with those vows. Doesn't mean anything. But he has to make it sound profound.
Sounds like you almost know the man.
He has to make it sound significant and theological. He can't possibly say that he's just a guy in a hormone rage and can't control it like a rutting pig. But that's exactly what guys like that are, rutting pigs. Okay? And of course, he can call me. We'll give my telephone number and let's debate the issue. And I freely admit that I could be wrong on the background, but I'm certainly not wrong on the application. Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pat. I just wanted to give my own personal view on that.
Well, we.
By now, you realize, of course, that you have not heard the telephone call to which Pat Campbell is referring. The situation is this. Pat Campbell sent me a copy of a recording of the program, and it starts where this one starts, after the introduction and after the phone call, which Pat had received the day before and played. I believe from my answers you'll be able to figure out what the substantive comments of the caller were, but sort of to give you an idea or a concept, one of them was that Pat was a Manichaean because he opposed any kind of sexual activity, and two, that Mary Magdalene was not a prostitute, or there was no reason to believe that according to the Bible. Again, there's nothing I can do other than tell you this is the way I got the tape from Pat. I'm sure that's the way it was recorded. There's nothing we can do to reclaim lost airwaves, but I don't think this takes away much from your enjoyment or understanding of the show. With that, let's go back live.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. I do want to clarify one thing. It's not Pat Campbell who's opposed to sex outside of marriage. It's God who is opposed to sex outside of marriage, and it's clearly stated in the Ten Commandments and throughout the Bible. Am I correct on that point?
Absolutely.
A couple of questions that the caller did raise that were legitimate questions that I brought you on the program to respond to. First of all, he started off by saying, what would have been so blasphemous and terrible if Mary and Joseph had conjugal relations? And we should clarify for the listening audience out there, there's a lot of well, I shouldn't say a lot, but there are some Christian denominations out there that believe, in fact, that Mary did have conjugal relations with Joseph and that she had children after Jesus. So I'll let you address that.
Once I remember I was interviewing a minister, and we got into a discussion on what was or who could use the word Christian correctly.
Right.
And he asked me, and I said, he who accepts the perpetual virginity of the Blessed Mother. And he was surprised. He said, I thought you'd say something about, you know, Jesus dying on the cross for us or something like that. And
mm-hmm.
I said, no. Anybody who denies the perpetual virginity of the Blessed Mother denies the Trinity, denies the Incarnation, denies the nature of the Bible, denies the nature of man, the nature of woman, denies absolutely everything. This is probably, and I disagree with Catholics on this issue, I think this is actually one of the archstone issues. You remove this, there's no Christianity left. Now, one would say, why, if sex is allowed in marriage, and if the Blessed Mother was married to St. Joseph, why couldn't they have sex? A bunch of reasons. The first one of which is that once anything, person, etc., becomes sanctified by the touch of God, mm-hmm. and the Blessed Mother did, that thing, place, and person becomes holy. And that means that holiness prevents that person, thing, or place from being treated in a normal, otherwise acceptable way. The Old Testament, when Moses came on the burning bush, God said, take your shoes off. You are on holy ground. Perfectly allowable to wear shoes, except when you're on holy ground.
Mm-hmm.
When the temple was built and the Holy of Holies was put inside of it, only the high priest could go in there, and he used to have a rope tied on his leg so that if he died while inside, the other priests could pull him out because they couldn't go in there. Otherwise, his body would rot and profane the place. The Ark of the Covenant was not allowed to be touched by human beings. And we have the story in the Old Testament of poor old Uzzah. When he reaches up to touch it because it's going around a corner and it's about to tip over, he reaches up in a perfectly normal reaction to steady it so it won't be damaged, and he's struck dead by God. When something is sanctified, when something is made holy, when something is set aside for God's use and not for man's use, for man then to use it is blasphemy. It is profanation. It is sacrilege. Absolute, guaranteed, 100%, if you believe in God, this must follow. Now, what we have is that the Blessed Mother was chosen by God the Father, literally conceived by the power of God the Holy Ghost, and bore within her, it was her flesh that became the Word made flesh. It was her blood that flowed in the veins of Jesus. That means that her body, her blood, her womb, everything about her was sanctified by the Trinity, the absolute God, divine, eternal Lord of all creation.
Mm-hmm.
To then hold that after this, she could then be quote-unquote used in a normal human fashion is to deny the existence of God, to deny the Incarnation, to deny the divinity of Jesus, to deny the words of the Bible which tell us that St. Joseph was a just man and therefore certainly would honor the act of choosing by God of this holy vessel, this gate of heaven, this blessed mother, the mother of God, to be honored through all generations as blessed among and beyond all other women. But even more than that, there's several other arguments. If we go back to the original creation of man and the original creation of woman as recorded in Genesis, what we have is man being created by inanimate from some inanimate material, and then we have woman being created from man. We do not have any sexual activity to procreate the human race. That only happens after the fall. Now, if God's original plan was to create humans almost in a sense of cell mitosis, sort of cell divisions, which is what his original plan was, because that's what happened before the fall, then when he is going to bring about the redemption of man and the creation of the perfect man, he would certainly not use the normal means of procreation. He would use a special means. And the special means, again, sanctifies that Blessed Mother as a new creation, as the means of the new creation, again, not to be profaned due to
sexual activity, which is the result of the fall. Now, when I mean profaned, I do not mean by any means that sexual activity is wrong, but as you put it, clearly, sexual activity is perfectly allowable and mandated according to God's teaching in marriage. It is absolutely forbidden outside of marriage. This is simply a matter of right in the sense of privilege and permission versus wrong. If I own something, I may dispose of it as I wish. If you own something, I can't dispose of it. The status of a person and his rights and his privileges determine what he can do and what he cannot do. So very clearly in this case, we have a situation that the Blessed Mother, her privilege, her status was as daughter, spouse, and mother of God. She was not therefore then to be considered the wife, in the normal sense of the word, of any man on earth, no matter who he was.
Vin, we need to take a short commercial break here. When we come back, we're going to get Vin's input on Mary Magdalene, whether or not she was a prostitute. Was Pat Campbell wrong, or was Pat Campbell right? Back with more right after this.
More rock and talk with Pat Campbell.
Welcome back, folks. This morning, special guest, hour number one, the ultimate Catholic, Mr. Vin Lewis from ARM Ministry, that's A-R-M, which stands for All Roads Ministry. Vin, we want to pick up our conversation with some of the remarks made by yesterday's caller. Encountered anybody in my life that wanted to defend Mary Magdalene, but it's nice to know that she still has some supporters out there 2,000 years after the fact. The gentleman took me to task and said that I was wrong, that Mary Magdalene was in fact not a prostitute, and there is no biblical basis for that. What gives, Vin?
Well, let me be impartial. The fella actually didn't defend her. What he did was he said that you were making a biblically unjustified statement.
All right.
I think in that sense he's correct, in the sense that it does not specify. Jesus comes across women caught in adultery, etc., and he definitely talks favorably about prostitutes, and there's comments that he associates with the wrong kind of people, mainly prostitutes and tax collectors. But it does not, unless someone's got a different translation than I've ever run across, it never specifies that Mary Magdalene was, in fact, a Reformed prostitute. However, there is a strong church, shall I say, opinion that, in fact, she was. And as a matter of fact, there are Georges de La Tour, a famous French artist, did a series of paintings on this, of the effect of Mary Magdalene, the effect that Jesus had on Mary Magdalene, and in it he uses symbolism to represent that she was a prostitute. She's putting aside her jewelry, etc., and sort of facing the fact that now she's been called to lead a more righteous life. So what we have is a statement, and I think he's perfectly correct. If you're going by the Bible alone, you cannot make that claim. However, since nobody goes by the Bible alone ever, then I think one is legitimately allowed to, as the expression goes, to think with the church on this and follow an age-old opinion that the Mary Magdalene was, in fact, a Reformed prostitute who then became, of course, a saint.
The tradition has been within the Catholic Church that she is, or was, shall we say, a woman of loose morals, ill repute, or, as we said earlier, a prostitute, correct?
Yes.
You know, I talked to a couple of friends out there that aren't Catholics but are Christians, very well versed in the Bible, and they were all under the impression, although they couldn't give me a specific biblical quote to back it up, that Mary Magdalene was, in fact, a prostitute, or, as you said, a woman of loose morals. Now, the gentleman went on in the phone call to accuse me of Manichaeism. Now, for the listeners out there who don't know, and I'm sure there's a lot, can you tell them what that involves and why he was accusing me of being guilty of it?
Yeah, briefly, Manichaeism is a perversion of Zoroastrianism, which was an old Persian religion founded, if I remember correctly, about 600 B.C. And as it developed a concept that there were, in essence, two gods that we could get in touch with, a good god and a bad god. Behind it, ultimately, was the real god. But in everyday life, there was this endless war between good and evil. And so every object on earth or every thought or every action became something good or evil. There's nothing wrong with that concept, but the concept of two gods is. And then the point that the real perversion came into, that certain things were inherently evil always. So as an example, they would use the argument that fire was always good, but ice was always bad. It didn't depend on the circumstances. And Manichaeism in its terrible form ultimately developed into something called Albigensianism, which was a horrible, horrible denial of Christianity.
Vin, can we pause on that note?
Oh,
because
sure.
I do need to go to the newsroom.
Sure.
And we'll pick up our discussion of Manichaeism
with our guest, Vin Lewis, the world's ultimate Catholic. After this news break, we're going to go to the newsroom with newsman Dean, back with more right after this.
And the walking, talking robot of the Catholic Church, the world's ultimate Catholic, Mr. Vin Lewis, joining us via phone from Hopewell, New York. By the way, if you have a call, a comment, a question, something you'd like to share with Vin or the listening audience, give us a call here at 835-1330, 835-1330. Cellular One user, star 1330, that call is free and fax is coming at 835-8395. And if the caller is out there and he can strap on a set, the guy that called up and chastised me yesterday, and you want to take on Mr. Vin Lewis, this is your opportunity. Vin, let's get back to this so-called heresy or sin that I'm guilty of, according to the caller, Manichaeism. He said, I've got this hang-up, the sex is dirty.
Again, Manichaeism ultimately said that flesh and life itself, human life in the body, is evil. So therefore, it sort of perverted itself into the concept that if life, human life, is evil, human flesh is evil, the propagation of human life through sexual activity is, of course, evil. So therefore, sex itself is evil because that's what it yields. And the Manichaeism you see very, very strongly in a lot of Protestantism, their whole denial of the idea of drinking, their idea of playing games, their idea of recreation, their idea of hatred of anything that just brings joy to someone or recreation or leisure. That's very common in the strong puritanical aspect of Protestantism. Mm-hmm. They were infected by Manichaeism. Catholics, not at all. Also, you see this in the almost in the vegetarian ego freak groups, where somehow everything that man does is evil, all we do is pollute, all we do is destroy. Manichaeism, again, is it never grabbed hold of Catholicism because obviously it's wrong and Catholicism is always right.
Mm-hmm.
So what this guy is accusing you of being is actually of being a Protestant, where they hate the flesh in and of itself, but of course Protestants being opposed to God have to hate the creation of God, and the creation of God is both good, all is good, and that means flesh and soul and spirit are all good. So the guy's wrong in what he accused you of completely. Utterly.
He hung up, too. He didn't want to stick around to argue the facts.
Well, he probably felt it was wrong to use his flesh to speak, because he probably is a Manichaean, and he probably had to go and confess himself and scourge himself and make himself feel bad, which is the only thing Manichaeism likes, is feeling bad.
Vin, you saw this the story that appeared in the Wanderer about this little Corpus convention down in Youngstown, Ohio, that featured the radical Benedictine nun, Joan Chittister, and the ex-priest, Anthony Padovano. Both of these individuals have received a lot of attention from our, shall we say, liberal media. Joan Chittister was on 60 Minutes not long ago, and I've seen Padovano on a host of talk shows, far too many to list on this program, but even programs like Larry King. What do you think of people that at least claim to be Catholic, either saying these kind of things or being present when others say these kind of things?
Well, it's a good point you said claim, because I was going to chastise you for the beginning talking about them as being the lunatic fringe within the Catholic Church. There's no rational way you can call these people Catholics or within the Catholic Church. It doesn't matter that they're ordained or took a vow or wear a habit. This is a free country, and there's no way to check a person's soul. So anybody can call themselves a nun, a priest. Anybody can, you know, any man can get ordained lying his way through. But let's be realistic. The nature of Catholicism is as follows. It's a very rigid, brittle system. You either accept it 100% completely, or you're not a Catholic. That's all there is to it. It's very simple. It's as simple as going into a movie theater. If you push your way in through the fire exit and they try to throw you out, you can't insist that you're there legally. You're not. You're there physically, but you don't have the license to be within it. The same token, you can't go behind stage or backstage to a performance or a concert unless you have a pass. They have a perfect right to prevent you from going in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can sneak in, or you can bluff, or you can forge the credentials, and that's all these people are doing. And any person who's a real Catholic, who's present with these, has an obligation to register a protest in some form or another, either by walking out or by, say, standing up and facing away, or by verbally interrupting, or by if they're another speaker, they have to get up and they have to say, I want you to understand what was said is not Catholic teaching. Once again, just for the non-Catholics out there and the weak Catholics, Catholicism is based as follows. Once in the set of beliefs, always in. and the only way it can be in is from the very beginning. So therefore, Catholicism is what Jesus taught. Nothing can be added or taken away to that as far as dogma goes. Nothing, period. It's closed. It's like mathematics. It's like the times table. You can't discover a new whole number between 2 and 3. It doesn't exist. The system is rigid, fixed. You can't discover a new president between George Washington and John Adams and rewrite history. No good. It's a fact. Catholicism is historical, truthful, but rigid and brittle. There's no, it's like, again, that archway. Move one stone, the entire thing falls, and it's no longer Catholicism. So these people are simply those who, no longer wanting to seek the approval of God, want to seek the attention of men. It's unfortunate that this is a very feminine characteristic. These guys are either having problems with their testosterone, and the women are just, unfortunately, probably sexually suppressed. And instead of doing it the proper way, they're doing it the improper way. They're seeking attention from large groups of people. This is nothing but strippers in a theological sense exposing themselves, or flashers in Central Park whipping over their raincoats to shock the tourists. That's
what
all this is.
Priceless analogy. That is just beautiful. Let me ask you this, because I know a lot of Catholics myself out there who do not swallow, if you would, if you'll pardon the phrase, all of the teachings of the Church, hook, line, and sinker. I know a lot of folks out there that will openly admit to practicing artificial birth control and say, hey, look, it's the 90s, the Church is out of touch. I've been told by my... In fact, you can find priests. We can find priests right here in Erie that will tell you that artificial birth control is follow your conscience, they tell you. I've known Catholics who have either had abortions or been involved with somebody who did, and it was the lesser of two evils. You see, the child wouldn't have been wanted. Or they believe that the Church, you know, well, we should have married clergy, we should have homosexual clergy, we should sanction homosexual marriage. You know the list. It goes on and on. What are you telling me about those Catholics?
They're not Catholics. And I'll draw a distinction here. There's an immense difference between us being a sinful, bad Catholic, maybe even one who winds up in hell, and a non-Catholic. The sinful Catholic is he who, knowing what is right, does what is wrong. That describes me. I know what's right, and I sin all the time, but I don't deny my sins. The person who says artificial contraception is allowed is a non-Catholic. The person who says artificial contraception is not allowed, but I do it anyway, is a sinning Catholic. Big deal. I mean, big difference. Mm-hmm. The reason is the sinning Catholic can still get into heaven. The non-Catholic cannot. He has cut himself off completely from the sanctifying grace of God and the necessary means of getting into heaven, which are primarily adherence to the truth. Mm-hmm. And this conscience bit is perfectly correct. We are both obligated and permitted to follow our conscience. The only problem with the people who say that is the following. If they follow their conscience, they will always wind up in Rome, because Rome is exactly where your conscience will lead. This is why I've said before, and I say it again, about nobody being willing to confront me or debate me in that eerie area, despite the fact occasionally I've made snide remarks on the air, is that they know my ultimate argument to them, and I use it all the time, is, are you really telling the truth? Do you really believe what you say? Are you willing to swear that on your salvation? And, of course, they won't, because nobody outside of the legitimate, full, dogmatic Catholic Church is following their conscience. Because God, who sent Jesus to die on the cross and suffer that agony for us, doesn't let our consciences go along with evil. If Jesus came and shed his blood and was mocked and suffered pain so we could get into heaven, if he moved heaven and earth so we could get into heaven, he's certainly going to either provide the guardian angel or the Blessed Mother or dreams or consciences to annoy you when you're wrong. So all of these people are literally lying. And the thing is, Pat, all you got to do is, I suggest it all the time, look at them very seriously, put your hand on their shoulder, look them right in the eye and say, tell me you really mean what you just said by your salvation. So if you're lying, you're going to hell. And they'll always look away and say, Pat, I'm not going to talk about this.
Vin, let's pause on that note. I need to get a commercial break in.
Sure.
We'll be back with more from our guest, Vin Lewis. The phone number here, if you have a comment, a question, 835-1330, 835-1330. Cellular One users, star 1330, fax is coming at 835-8395. Back with more. I really really shouldn't pick on Mickey today. He's not doing too well. Welcome back as we continue our discussion this morning with the world's ultimate Catholic, Mr. Vin Lewis. Vin, you know, I've talked to a number of Catholic priests here in the Erie area who have taken me to task off air. I won't embarrass any of them by mentioning their names, but they chastise me for what they call irresponsible journalism, for bringing you on the airwaves. They accuse you of being a Neanderthal, knuckle-dragging, Stone Age, throwback, pre-Vatican II Catholic who has set back the ecumenical movement by 100 years. How would you respond to that type of criticism?
I would point out to them that these priests, if that's what they really are, should be studying the Bible, because the Bible says that if I'm wrong, they through admonish me to my face, number one, just as brother to brother, but number two, if they're any status at all, such as a priest, then they have an obligation as shepherd of a flock to admonish me to my face. To talk about me behind my back, as they've done, is gossip, backbiting, sinful, scurrilous, cowardly, and effeminate. I point out again that I always give my telephone number. They have not called me, so therefore, the only thing you can conclude is that once again, like the women they are, because we've had women priests for approximately two or three generations, just doesn't change it yet on the passports and the driver's licenses, but they're definitely women. They don't have the guts, the intelligence, the holiness, the righteousness to confront me to my face, to stand up to me, or to correct me, because they know they're wrong.
Vin, you're one of a kind. 835-1330, 835-1330 is the number that puts you in touch. Vin, another brief article that appeared in the Wanderer, a national conservative Catholic newspaper, had to do with a new Catholic church that has popped up in Albany, New York. In fact, I took the Good Sisters on East Lake Road to task, and I have continually said that if you don't like the church, leave it. Now I've found a place for them to go up in Albany. We've got Father Richard G. Roy, 46, a religious priest who was recently ordained as an abbot in the Orthodox of Moore's Church. Never even heard of that one before myself. Has set up a new independent Catholic church in the Diocese of Albany. According to a story that appeared in the Schenectady Daily Gazette, his church will, quote-unquote, offer people an alternative to the authority of the Pope, as it is presently construed. His Church of the Holy Trinity, which I think is blasphemy by calling it that, will ordain lesbians, homosexuals, sanction birth control, and marry homosexuals. Now, Father Roy, a priest for 3 years, who recently, guess what, came out of the closet, announced that he is a homosexual, held his first worship service as the pastor of the Independent Church of the Holy Trinity at the United Church of Christ site with, get this, Vin, six, count them, six parishioners. He said, and I quote here, "The Roman Catholic Church needs to recognize that there is independence and diversity in order to be truly Catholic. That is universal." He said that we know that we cannot be cut off from the universal church. What do you make of this new Catholic church?
Well, listen to just the quotes you said. We're independent, but we cannot be cut off. Independent, by definition, means cut off. When the colonies of the United States, which became the United States, became independent, they cut themselves off from England.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible clearly says there's one faith, one Lord, one baptism. That means there's no such thing as an independent church which claims to be part, somehow, of a larger organization but independent from it. Once again, I've always pointed out that people like this self-contradict themselves. All you have to do is listen. It's a house divided against itself that cannot stand. That's one theory, which, of course, Jesus stated. Or the other is that being, shall we say, on the other side and serving Satan, they have to lie because Satan's the father of all lies, and therefore they have to lie about themselves. The point is, this is utter, complete nonsense. This is complete lunacy. Again, free country, you can call yourself a Catholic, but you aren't. It's a very brittle, very rigid, very dogmatic system. Move it a bit and you're out. But as I say, just look at his own words. We're independent, but we're part of something else. Utterly impossible. Complete self-contradiction. All of these things are. You can be independent or you can be part of something larger, but you can't be both. And that's one of the reasons that Protestants are always so loony on this also. They say the same thing. We're the Baptists, we're the Methodists, we're the Presbyterians, but we're part of something larger, which is divided into completely exclusive things. Uh-uh. Can't be. My leg is part of my body. If I went through an amputation, my leg's gone. Maybe they bury it. I don't know what they do with it. But it's no longer part of my body. It's an ex-part of my body. This is pure lunacy. And at the same time, though, then the Protestants will also say that you can get divorced and remarried, which again, it's in the true sense of the word a real self-abuse of the mind that God gives us to try to sustain completely contradictory positions and somehow call them truth.
Vin, let's take a few calls. The lines are lit up. Good morning. You're on Flagship. You have a question or comment for my guest?
Yes, I was just wondering if your guest has authored any works.
Yeah, about 12 books.
Oh, okay. Do any of them have any? Do any of them have Neo Abstat or Imprimatur?
No.
It's been a long time since I've taken Latin. I hope those are the correct
names. No, I offered it once, and the censor of books in the Archdiocese of New York told me that they only take it from big, fancy publishing houses. Don't send me anything else.
But isn't it true that Neo Abstat and Imprimatur is a seal of the church saying that this is the dogma, this is the truth, this is the way, and that your works then, in fact, don't have that?
No, I told you. Listen to me again. They will not accept it from an independent publisher. They won't even look at it. That's their policy. They only accept it from big publishers. You could print your own Bible. You could photocopy the Bible. They won't give you a Neo Abstat or an Imprimatur because, as they say, they don't take it from independent publishers. That's their policy. That's number one. Number two, a Neo Abstat or an Imprimatur merely means that the guy who did the censor books on that didn't find anything wrong with it. It is a purely personal opinion and has absolutely nothing to do with dogmatic churches. Now, that doesn't mean to say the opinion is necessarily wrong, but it is not necessarily right either. Once again, it is an individual judgment by an individual as to his opinion as to what the books contain.
You know, I can't speak for the veracity of what you've said, but I can only say that my understanding of a Neo Abstat is that it is the church's underscoring.
But you're making a terrible mistake. There is no such thing as the church putting its seal on there. It's only a human being. Use a personal noun.
It's a person who's the agent of the church.
Right. And can he sin?
Of course he can sin.
Can he make a mistake?
So can you. And it's
No. Fine. Please answer my question. Can he sin and make a mistake as to what should be in a book and what should not?
Certainly.
Okay, fine. So therefore, that's only my point. It's an opinion. So it is not the position of the church, because the church, quote-unquote, the divine institution which has human members, can never make a mistake on formal positions. So therefore, your own position is incorrect.
Vin, allow me to interject here for a minute if I can. I think the caller has a very legitimate point. This may be a mistaken idea, but there is the general impression out there among Catholics that an imprimatur on a book means that what's contained within is in line, in accordance with the teachings of the church, and that the contents of that book has the approval of the church.
Absolutely not.
I'm saying that's the impression that's out there.
I know,
there in the public.
And it's a completely wrong impression.
Well, you know, that's contrary to everything which I recall being taught by the Sisters of Mercy.
Sure, I don't doubt it. But just to point out something to you, simply because you would, again, the same thing. The Sisters of Mercy could have sinned. Those same Sisters of Mercy, I guarantee, if you go back to that school, you'll find 90% of them have left the order, that the school is closed down, that nobody's practicing the faith in that church.
I don't believe so. Not
go back and go do it. Call me back. I'd love to see it, because they closed down the place where I learned heretical Catholicism when I was a kid. We had a whole bunch of nuns. That order is dying out. Almost all those orders are dying out because they were filled with heresy.
Well, that may be true, but the nuns, if they left the order, it's because they rejoined Christ in heaven. It's not because they...
No. I mean, good God, do you read nothing? Do you know nothing? The number of priests and nuns and religious who have left orders after Vatican II is massive.
What I'm
absolutely
talking about is the nuns that I had are no longer of this world. They are...
I understand your point. But the point is, those nuns became mother superiors, and they recruited new people who became outward lesbians appearing on Phil Donahue, wearing short hair, running around in the ghetto and denying Christ. It happened everywhere. Look at the Marinolas, look at the Jesuits, look at the Franciscans, look at the Dominicans. There isn't a single order in the church that hasn't become extremely corrupt in almost a completely...
I want to challenge you there. I want to challenge you there on that one. Two orders that I can think of immediately that have not become corrupt: the Carmelites, that are cloistered, and number two, the Daughters of St. Paul.
Well, there's the point.
I got to run.
Cloistered.
Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Go ahead.
Cloistered is your point. The cloistered orders, absolutely, and I'm sure the Trappists probably pretty well. No, Thomas Merton. I'm sure the cloistered groups are still pure, but the ones that, quote, became worldly, they betrayed the faith almost always. You just gave me a couple of examples of these Benedictine nuns and these priests. those people, I guarantee you, are still suckering, shall I say, literally suckers, who are saying, well, it's a nun. It's got to be true. She's up there in a habit. Mm. That man's got a turned-around collar. He's got to be telling the truth.
They no longer wear habits.
But the point is that I established with that person, a church man can always make a mistake, including on doctrine.
Right.
The church institutionally, which does not decree on books, cannot.
I'm glad you clarify that. Let's take another call here. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Hi, Pat.
Go ahead.
I have a question for you and Vin. Did you say earlier that Mary was a virgin all through her life?
Yes.
Well, then how do you explain then Matthew chapter 13, verse 53 through 56?
Yeah, what is that, the one where brothers and sisters and the names?
Yes.
Okay, what does Jesus say? I always go by what Jesus says, not what someone else. Jesus says, my brothers and sisters are they who do the will of my Father in heaven. Jesus says that his brothers and sisters are them. He never says they are, have the same mother as I.
Well, that's not... Apparently you're thinking of a different scripture. This is a scripture where...
Read the verse you have, caller.
Well, okay. Read the part I said, the end part of it.
Let me start from the beginning. And it's when Jesus had finished these parables, he moved on from there. Coming to his hometown, he began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed. Where did this man get the wisdom and these miraculous powers, they ask. Isn't this the carpenter's son? Okay.
Sure, but now, he wasn't the carpenter's son, was he?
Yes, he, well...
No, he wasn't the carpenter's son,
was he? They
thought
that he was.
That, well, excuse me. He wasn't the carpenter's son,
but
was
the
he?
People, but the
would you answer a question, yes or no, once in your life, like is required in the Bible? He wasn't the carpenter's son, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Right. So therefore, you're now quoting people who do not know family relationships. They are obviously completely wrong about the nature of Jesus.
No, you're
about,
wrong.
Let me finish my point. They are completely wrong about the nature of Jesus. They have attributed to him a blasphemy, and you're going to base a religious belief on blasphemous people? Is that what you're telling me?
No, you're wrong. They are a group of people who he grew up with.
Excuse me. If you call him... Jesus a carpenter's son, are you blaspheming? Would you please answer a question, yes or no?
Yeah, I can understand.
No. That's yes, right? That's a blasphemy, right?
Right.
So therefore, you are using blasphemous sources in order to prove a non-Catholic source, non-Catholic dogma, correct?
I know you think you really know a lot of things.
Thank you very much for not answering my question.
Listen,
could you please answer a question? You're using a blasphemous source to prove a non-Catholic dogma, aren't you? Hello?
No, I'm using...
No, okay, is that a blasphemous source? Are those peaceful blasphemers? Let's try it again.
Pat, would you please let me...
No, would you answer my question? I'm not going to let you say anything until you answer my question. Are those people blaspheming?
No, they are...
They are not. So therefore, let's try it again. Let's go back one more step and contradict you again and expose you once again as a fraud. Is it blasphemy to say Jesus is a carpenter's son?
Caller and Vin, I'm going to put you both on hold. We've got to go to the news at the top of the hour. When we return, we'll pick up our conversation with this caller and take your calls for Vin Lewis in the order they're received at 835-1330. Cellular One user, *1330 puts you in touch. And yes, if you'd like to fax Vin, 835-8395. We'll be back after the ABC News with more.
Way with Pat Campbell.
The musical group Heart, the song Even It Up. Exactly what Vin Lewis is doing today with the 1-2 punch combination. That's right. Joining me this morning for hour number one and now for hour number two, my special guest, Mr. Vin Lewis, who likes to bill himself as the ultimate Catholic. He will defend any Catholic church teaching position from a biblical perspective. And if you can trip him up, he will renounce his faith on the spot and assume the faith of the individual who has managed to stump him. Vin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
First of all, this should come as no surprise to you. That last caller bailed out.
Yeah, but let me make a general principle which is useful to everybody.
Go right ahead.
Everything in the Bible is true. No two ways about it. If the Bible says the children of Israel went across the Red Sea because it split, that's exactly what happened. But not everybody in the Bible tells the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the high priest, when he had Jesus in front of him, accused him of blasphemy and then said, and this is a direct quote from the Bible, essentially like, he has committed blasphemy. What other proof do we need?
Yeah.
But in fact, Jesus did not commit blasphemy. We have records in the Bible of people lying. Lots of them. So therefore, to take a quote from a liar or a mistaken person in the Bible, mm-hmm. and to take that quote and then attribute to it the same validity that one attributes to a truth teller in the Bible or God himself is, in the true sense of the word, blasphemy. And the point I tried to make to that guy, and of course he understood it, and of course that's why he hung up and he wouldn't stay on the phone. And again, we'll give my telephone number at the end. He can call me again,
mm-hmm.
and I'll talk to him endlessly, is that these people were committing a blasphemy by saying Jesus is the carpenter's son. That puts them in an unreliable source situation. It's the same thing with the O.J. Simpson trial. If you are shown to be a liar or incompetent, all of your testimony is subject to question or doubt. And that's exactly the point. These guys got the most basic relationship in the entire world wrong, the nature of the second person of the Blessed Trinity in flesh on earth. They got that wrong. I would never believe anybody further on that, on his word alone, on a religious matter. And that was the point I was trying to get across, and he knew it, and of course he wouldn't answer the questions. And remember, and I repeat it endlessly, let your yes be yes, your no be no, and anything else is from Satan or Martin Luther, same guy. Go ahead.
Let me ask you one question before
sure.
we go back to the phones. The callers online, bear with me. I will get to all of your calls in the order they're taken. Now, this is going to be a sensitive question, and this is just going to tick off a whole lot of Catholics out there. Once you give your answer, and I, the reason I'm asking you is I've gotten different answers from different priests that I've questioned about this. A situation that seems to be popping up more and more often now, you've got somebody who was married in the Catholic Church, got divorced, never went about obtaining an annulment, gets married in another church, you know, for regardless of the denomination. I get an invitation to the wedding. Does a good Catholic go? Does a good Catholic stay away? Why?
I say in a case like that, you cannot give an absolute answer, but you can give a highly probable answer. The highly probable answer is this. You do not go to the ceremony. You may go to the reception. Now, why would you even go to the reception? Because of the following, and I think it's a matter of prudence. If you stay away from the reception and say, like, it's your brother or something like that, and he says, if you're not coming to my wedding, I don't want anything more to you. I'm not going to talk to you again, blah, 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 forget it. You have now burned a bridge. If you go to the reception and you talk to him and bring up the point that, you know, this is bothering Mom, it bothers me, can't you get an annulment, can't you check this out, maybe you have a valid ground for an annulment, maybe you don't. The point is you may have planted a seed which may ultimately grow into something for this fellow's salvation. Very quick story of my own. I'm at a mass a while back ago which is being offered for my grandparents. Both of my nephews show up dressed improperly. And I said to both of them, are you aware you're going to Mass? Well, yes, I am. And the Holy Sacrifice in the Mass is not a picnic, and you shouldn't be dressed that way. They both got huffy. And I pressed them, and I started to get nasty answers, and I said, listen, I can see at this point you're lying. I'm not going to press it anymore. I'm simply letting you know I object to it. My nephew goes away on vacation. I talk to him. I believe it was yesterday. This is why I talked to him, so I could bring it up on the phone today. Or it was Monday. I don't know, a couple of days ago. And I said to him, listen, as long as we're bringing, I don't want to bother you, but I want to bring this up again. And he says, I know. And he says, you know, since you've brought it up, it's been bothering me, and I now wear different clothes. The point was this. What I could have done is I could have said, Joe, if you go to Mass dressed like that, I'm never going to have anything to do with you again as my nephew. I could have done that,
right?
But then I wouldn't have been able to follow up with this phone call, which gave me reassurance that you sort of drop it at a certain point without giving approval.
Mm-hmm.
The religious ceremony between between a person being married outside the church and
let me ask you this.
Yes,
do I do anything wrong by attending that ceremony?
Well, it is if, and I'm very careful about this, if by your presence you're giving some formal approval. I gave an example. I once attended the funeral service for a Jewish man. That is Jewish in the sense of he was a Jew, ethnic Jew, but the ceremony had no religious aspect to it. But it was held in a Jewish memorial chapel.
Mm-hmm.
I went
And if you want to find out why I went, you'll have to turn over to Side 2, where the conversation and the program will continue. Thank you. This is an arm tape on the air with Pat Campbell, Vin Lewis live on a radio program which took place in August of 1995. Conversation continues.
I gave an example. I once attended the funeral service for a Jewish man. That is Jewish in the sense of he was a Jew, ethical Jew, ethnic Jew, but the ceremony had no religious aspect to it. But it was held in a Jewish memorial chapel.
Mm-hmm.
I went, and I saw nothing wrong with this, because at no time did they ask the congregation to pray, did they ask us to render any kind of, say anything in Hebrew. We didn't have to do any gestures or anything. Now, however, you are of course aware that in a Catholic ceremony, the congregation participates in sometimes communal prayer, certainly in kneeling at certain points,
sure,
and getting up, maybe
sure,
in receiving communion. The few times I have seen Protestant or non-Catholic services of this type, I have never seen any activity that they ask you to participate in,
mm-hmm,
and therefore give a witness that you're approving or part of it.
Okay.
So I would say that would be the key point. If at a certain point they would say, now everybody here who thinks these people are joined together in the eyes of God correctly according to the rites of the Bible, everybody raise their hand, then I would, and you're raising your hand, then you've done something wrong.
All
but
right,
if you're simply there as a social event, and let's get it straight, Protestant religious service.
There is, unfortunately, a break in the tape here. The point I was making is that Protestant religious services are nothing but social events. They have no religious aspect at all.
Anyway, if you're only there as a social event, then I would say under those circumstances you could go, and you should, if you think that this would be a way to continue a relationship with the other person to ultimately bring him back.
Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. You just made me think. Is the gentleman's feelings that anybody outside the Catholic Church, as far as Baptists, Protestants, Muslims, what have you, Jewish people, they are not going to get to heaven?
Well, yes and no. It's not a feeling. It's a fact. Yes, you can't get into heaven unless you're a Catholic.
Okay.
Since Pentecost.
Pardon me?
Since Pentecost.
And this is an absolute.
Absolute.
You've seen the deal in absolutes, and it has been proven that the Catholic Church has made mistakes, as you well know, with Galileo and other things that were supposed to be absolutes. And,
absolutely wrong.
Pardon me?
Absolutely wrong.
Are you telling me that the sun, in fact, revolves around the earth? And they
I'm telling you that that's still an open question, but that's not the point. What I'm telling you is the Catholic Church made no determination on Galileo whatsoever. Let me finish my point.
They excommunicated them.
No, absolutely not. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, I do.
Okay, listen to me.
Listen
to me. Catholic Church men made certain determinations on Galileo, and I don't know if you're aware about it. They essentially prosecuted him for copyright violations. Okay, I don't know if you're aware of that. He was essentially brought up on civil, not religious charges. I don't know if you're aware of that either. He made an agreement not to publish a certain thing in papal lands, and then he broke the agreement, and he was brought up on charges of that. But one of the things about Galileo is there's been so much forgery and so much deception about that, it's very hard to get to the truth. What I'm telling you is this. Church men, in a panel, rendered a decision which may or may not have been just. I don't know. But I tell you this, it wasn't the Catholic Church, which is a divine institution peopled by men. You must draw a distinction.
Yeah. Another case in point, Catholic priests, as when they take vows of poverty, am I correct?
No.
They don't.
Some do, some don't.
They don't take them at all?
Some do, some don't.
Is it supposed to be an absolute? So this is something else that is not an absolute. This is a choice you can make.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so what you're saying is you guys don't deal in absolutes.
No, I didn't say that at all. You said that, and that's a lie.
Yeah, because you're telling me that you either can take a vow or you don't, and they're supposed to be living Christ-like, who supposedly, you know, put out, you know, this vow of poverty and everything.
No, what I'm telling you is you can absolutely root for the Yankees or absolutely not, and you know what, it's an option. I beg your pardon? I'm sorry.
You know the Pope took a vow of poverty?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Do you know the Pope took a vow of poverty?
Do I know that, if you're asking me?
No, he did.
I don't know. I don't think he was... let me draw a distinction here and give you a little bit of information.
Mm-hmm.
In the Catholic Church, this may sound a little odd, There are religious who are secular and religious who are religious.
Right. I'm thinking the Pope would be the second one.
I don't know. A religious is he who joins an order, such as a Franciscan, a Dominican, a Carmelite.
Mm-hmm.
Those generally take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience.
Yeah.
If he's a secular priest, which means he belongs to a diocese or an archdiocese, then he takes a vow of obedience and chastity, but he does not take a vow of poverty. So therefore, a priest who does not take a vow of poverty may earn money on his own, have his possessions, and leave them to his uncle, brother, or anyone.
Can I interject for a minute,
sure.
Caller? And Vin, it is my understanding, since Pope John Paul II, our current pope, does not, or has not, to the best of my knowledge, belong to a religious order like the ones that Vin just mentioned, that he has never taken a vow of poverty.
Okay.
I could be mistaken, but I do not believe he has.
That's my impression, too, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right,
thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Let's take another, I tell you what, let's take a commercial break, and then we'll take some more calls for Vin Lewis here at 835-1330. We'll also be giving out a number if you want to find out more about All Roads Ministry and the monthly publication he puts out called Armament. We'll be back with more right after this.
Way with Pat Campbell.
Welcome back, folks, as we continue with this, hour number two of a Thursday edition of The Right Way. If you want to, if you've been one of those folks who is constantly saying,
help me!
We got good news for you. The Shell Answer Man's here today, Mr. Vin Lewis. Vin, welcome back, and let's
Let me make a generalization.
Go right
ahead. The last caller. When he said we're dealing with absolutes, but we're not, what he fails to understand, and he should try to put this in his reasoning, is if-then type statements. If a condition applies, then the absolute applies. If the condition does not apply, then the absolute doesn't. A very brief, simple analogy. If I marry Louisa, then I must remain faithful to Louisa. If I marry Mary, then I mustn't have sexual relationships with Louisa. Now, according to the reasoning of the last caller, he would say, well, gee whiz, Vin, you're on both sides of the same issue. Do you have sex with Louisa or do you not? Is it right? Is it wrong? It depends totally on the status and the condition that applies. So, if, in fact, the formal ruling from the institutional church had ruled on Galileo, and if, in fact, that decision were wrong, then, in fact, the church were wrong. But, in fact, it were only a board of members who happened to be church men. And just like imprimaturs and just like Neil Obstarts, men can make mistakes.
Fair enough. Some more phone calls for Vin Lewis here at 835-1330. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Pat.
How are you?
I'm the guy who had called earlier concerning Matthew.
Okay. I thought you jumped out on us.
I had to bail out because I had another phone call.
Hey, these things happen.
So, but can I try to make my point without being interrupted?
Sure, but make it brief, and then I'll comment. And then, if you wish to comment, fine. But were you able to hear my comments
after you had to hang up?
I beg your pardon?
I was able to hear that.
Okay, now please comment on that.
Okay. The comment I want to make on that is that the men who are being quoted in the scriptures here, they were only saying what they knew. They weren't necessarily blaspheming. They were just, they knew Jesus as a kid growing up in their town, knowing that he was a carpenter's son, because they didn't know he was the Son of God. They thought he was the son of Joseph.
Okay, I have a question for you. May I?
Sure.
Did Simeon and Anna in the temple at the presentation know this was the Messiah?
I'm not familiar with that.
No, because you're a Protestant and you don't read the Bible, so let me fill you in.
Okay.
At the presentation of the temple, Simeon, who was an Old Testament prophet, who was promised that he would not depart the earth till he saw the Messiah, held Jesus in his arms and said, now you can dismiss your faithful servant, Lord, because I have seen the Messiah. Did the Magi know that this was a very special birth? Yes, because they came from the east, he says. Right. Yes, I read the Bible. I'm a Protestant. I know this story. I know about the wise men. They came from the east because they saw this star which symbolized his birth. Did Herod know this? Well, yes, the other guy says. Yes, he did, Vin, because he tried to kill all those people, and he knew he would be the foreknown Messiah, the King of the Jews. And all of these people knew it because all of these people were righteous, and Herod wasn't righteous at all, but even he knew it. Therefore, if we apply the biblical principle from Jesus himself, he who seeks finds. He who asks for has it opened. He who knocks has it opened. He who asks for received. anybody who had the right disposition of heart, such as John the Baptist, such as St. Peter, such as all the others who believed in Jesus, knew that he was special and not the carpenter's son. So therefore, these people are responsible for their own ignorance. If they didn't know, it was their own fault. And even if you are correct that they were so-called invincibly ignorant, they're still wrong. And you don't believe wrong people. Even if they were honestly mistaken, they were wrong. Wrong.
They were wrong about, they were mistaken about Jesus being God's son.
Right.
Because they didn't, just because you're ignorant doesn't mean you're wrong.
Yes, it does. If you are ignorant and you say something incorrectly, you are wrong. They were wrong, were they not?
They were wrong.
And they were wrong about the family. And they were wrong about the family relationship of Jesus. Were they not?
They're ignorant.
No, excuse me. Answer the question. Try it again. Say yes. For once, listen. For once in your life, act like a man. Try to be semi-Catholic and act like a man and not like a woman who evades every direct question. Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
No.
Were they wrong about the family relationships of Jesus?
No.
Were they wrong about the family relationship of Jesus?
They were right that Jesus was his
Excuse
mother.
Me. Were they wrong about the family relationship of Jesus?
No. Mary was his mother.
Did they say Joseph was his father?
They said he was the carpenter.
Excuse me.
Yes.
That's supposed to be answered yes or no.
Yes.
Please try to imitate a Catholic man and answer a question directly as if you actually care about the truth and not imitate a weak Protestant woman by avoiding it. Tell the truth once in your life. You might find it enjoyable. Give it a shot.
They
now answer my question. Were they wrong about the family relationship of Jesus?
Based on what they knew, they were not wrong.
Please, Pat, somebody else. I don't want to waste my time.
Caller, I appreciate your input this morning. You know, Vin, this
Let
is
me
probably... Hold on, Vin. Hold
this
on,
is a perfect example of Protestantism.
Vin,
when
hold on a
second.
When they
have to answer yes or no, they won't.
This would be a tremendous opportunity for me to give a little disclaimer here. The views being expressed by our guests this morning are not necessarily the views of the station management, or necessarily the host. But I'm sure, according to Vin, they should be. Let's take another call here at 835-1330. Thanks for waiting. You're on Flagship. And thank you for waiting. You're on Flagship.
How about Mark 6:3? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph, and of Judah, and of Simon, and are not his sisters here?
Yeah, excuse me. Did you not just
hear? Wait a minute. Now, you run off at the mouth too much.
That's because I'm right and you're not.
You're trying to inject everything into people and trying to make them say things that you want them to say. Now, I asked you a question here.
No, you didn't.
Brothers and sisters or what?
No.
No. Then the Bible is wrong, huh?
Yeah, of course.
The Bible is
wrong. Your interpretation of the Bible is wrong.
No.
But that's all right. You're outside of the Church of Rome. You always get it wrong.
That's the problem. The interpretation's all the time. You read the Bible as it is.
Yes.
You don't interpret it. You read it as it is. And it
Excuse me. Let me ask you a simple question.
And he had sisters. So
Excuse
Mary,
me. May I ask you a simple question? May I ask you a simple question?
No.
Caller, let him ask you a question.
Yeah.
And I'll give you ample time to respond.
Okay.
Okay. Does the Bible say poke out your eye and cut off your hand if it causes you to sin?
Yeah, it does say that, yeah.
Do you take the Bible just as it is? Have you cut out your hand and poke off your eye?
No, you don't take it as
because
it is.
Because you don't... Right,
because
exactly the point, caller. You just said you take it as it is, and you don't take it as
you
it is.
You take everything
just
out of context.
Listen.
You're bringing in things that try to confuse people.
No, I'm not trying
to... How about the blood? How about the blood? Do you drink the blood and eat the flesh when you take... the Lord's Supper?
Hey, listen.
You bet we do.
Caller, I have no problem at all in dealing with you, but you will answer my questions or I'll ask Pat to cut you off, and we will deal with one issue at a time.
You did the same thing the last time.
Absolutely, and I'll do it again.
Because you were caught, and you didn't have an answer.
Excuse me, I always have an answer.
Hold on. Gentlemen, let me interject here. I will feel free to respond to the caller's question. He asked, do we eat the body and drink the blood of Jesus Christ? Real Catholics do. The answer is yes.
How?
At church, Holy Communion.
How?
How what?
It does not say in the Bible that you eat... why didn't he cut a piece of his flesh out and say, here, eat it. He had bread there.
What did he say when
he
held up... Hold on, caller, hold on. What did he say when he held up that bread and the wine in front of the apostles? What did he say? Did he say, this is a piece of bread, this is a glass of wine? No, hold on. What did he say?
Okay, this represents...
He said, this is my... No, he didn't say this represents.
Certainly.
He said, this is my body... This is my blood. Didn't
okay.
he?
Okay, so then all the bread you eat is his body?
No.
And all the wine you drink is his blood?
It has to be consecrated by a priest.
Oh, come on. There's no consecration. You know, if you read up on Catholicism, Roman Catholicism I'm talking about, I'm not.
Well, you did. You used to be one. You fell away, remember?
You betcha I fell away. Because
you can still come back.
I found the truth, and I fell away from it.
Hey, you can still come back. We got connections.
I would never come back because they do not glorify God wholly.
Finn.
Give everybody else praise and glory, and then he comes last.
I'm here.
Go ahead, respond, Finn.
He comes last.
The point, you see, Pat, you gave a very good answer, but the point is, if you notice exactly what he does, he brings up one point, and as you try to respond to it, he then brings up another, and you in your enthusiasm, Pat, and righteous enthusiasm, respond to the second. Now, this guy will get off the phone and say, you see, they never gave an answer to the first. It's a standard dishonest and Protestant technique. It's done all the time, and that's why I didn't want to fall for it. The point was this, and I repeat it. You just said you take the Bible exactly the way it is, and you don't take the Bible exactly the way it is. You have refuted yourself. You have contradicted yourself. Took all of about 45 seconds. It always does take about that long. You are advancing two completely, absolutely exclusive principles, and therefore you are a house divided against yourself, and therefore you cannot be part of the true kingdom of God.
But he can still come back, can't he, Vin?
What do you mean? Oh, of course.
Great.
Absolutely.
We'll make room for him. Hey, Vin, we got to go to the news. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll be back with more from Vin Lewis after this.
For National Sports Talk.
The news when you need it.
The Right Way with Pat Campbell.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants. Well, he gets. I don't like him any more than you.
That classic soundbite, of course, from the classic film Cool Hand Luke. Awesome, awesome. Soundbite there. I like using that throughout the program. Quite fitting with my guest this morning, Mr. Vin Lewis, the number that gets you, the listeners involved, 835-1330, cellular one user, star 1330, puts you in touch. And fax is coming at 835-8395. Vin, before we go back to the phones, I'd like to afford you the opportunity now to give out your phone number and or address.
Yeah, phone number, 914-226-4172. Only point I make clear is I feel free to record any phone call I receive. My address, ARM, as in the thing that hangs from your shoulder, 55.
The one we didn't cut off yet.
Yeah, 55 Palin, that's P as in pompous, A-L-E-N, Road, number 38, Hope Well, one word, Junction, New York, 12533. Let me make one point that the gentleman sort of agreed to and sort of contradicted. Being a non-Catholic, he has to be on both sides of everything. No one, I repeat, no one takes the Bible literally. We all take part of it literally, part of it metaphorically, part of it figuratively. All of us, every single one. So therefore, anybody who says, I take all of the Bible literally, is by definition a liar or a fool. In either case, he is, in the true sense of the word, discreditable. So therefore, when people accuse me of saying, well, you take only part of the Bible literally and part of it figuratively, I say you're absolutely correct. However, now the question becomes, what guide do you use to understand which part to take in which way? I use the guide of God as verified and as realized, actualized, through Holy Mother Church. Everybody else uses an improper guide. By everybody else, I mean non-Catholics. And that's a basic statement, which I simply wanted to make clear as a result of the last phone call.
And we should point out you've got a number of books that you have penned, authored, if you would, a number of cassettes. Do you have videos out, too?
Yeah, we don't push videos too much, primarily because our duplicating thing isn't very good, and we don't get really high-quality stuff. But I was on a Sally Jesse Raphael show three times, and we offer those, and we offer others. I'm on a TV show down in Western Texas.
Mm-hmm. And you also have a monthly newsletter publication called Armament, which you refer to not as a newsletter, but your textbook in installments.
Right.
What is the purpose of that?
The purpose of it is to educate, instruct, and motivate Catholics or non-Catholics how to defend, explain, and advance the true faith. So it's primarily techniques and motivation.
Mm-hmm.
It's and as much spirituality as I think is appropriate for that. So we don't really make you so much a better person. We expect God to do that working within you. But we do make you a more skilled debater, explainer, teacher, instructor.
Vin, let's go back to the phones at 835-1330. Thanks for waiting. You're on Flagship.
Yes, I have a couple questions for your guest.
Go right ahead, please.
All right, the first question is, say there are certain people, like the pygmies in South America, who have not come in contact with any modern civilization, have never come in contact with any person of the church, and
sure, I understand.
Therefore are completely ignorant.
Right. Don't need any more detail. Keep going.
Are they going to go to hell?
If they do not come to an acknowledgement of the dogmas that are necessary for faith, yes.
How do you back that up?
By the way, there's no pygmies in South America.
That's all right. Now, I understand what he means. How do I back that up? By a general philosophical principle outside of 50 or 60,000 Bible verses. And the general philosophical principle is this. Truth matters. Jesus came to bear witness to the truth, and everyone committed to the truth hears his voice. So therefore, if you do not hear his voice, the shed blood on the cross does not apply to you. You must affirm the truth that Jesus came to bear witness to. Now, I will simply point out to you the following, which I think you'll have to agree with if you believe in the existence of God. What is impossible for man is possible for God. God is not bound by geography. He's not bound by time. He's not bound by location. He's not bound by culture. He's not bound by environment. Therefore, if that guy in South America or that pygmy in Africa knows nothing about the truths he needs to know, and he nevertheless seeks the truth, God will provide a means for him to obtain the truth. Now, simple example of this, in the Acts of the Apostles, we have the Ethiopian who's going back to Ethiopia, having not been told the truth of Catholicism, and what happens is God, by a specific miracle, transports St. Philip to this guy to explain to him the teachings of the church, to baptize him, and then send him on his way. God, the reason that that's in the Bible, among other things, is to show you that God not only can, but God has done that. There are absolute historical, verifiable instances of a mystic, a Spanish mystic, bilocating and appearing to a tribe of Indians in Texas long before any Christians got there, because these kids, these Indians were already praying the rosary and honoring the Blessed Mother. They had been prepared in advance. This is an historical fact. It's simply verifiable. God does it once, he can do it again, and he will do it again. No man will go to hell because of ignorance unless he intentionally chooses to remain in that ignorance.
What was your other question, caller?
Yes, about the translation of the Bible.
Yes.
The English translation we presently use. How can you use that as a reliable source?
Okay, there are different translations of the Bible, and I think you have to be careful. I don't think you'd mean the word reliable. We'll be very correct. We'll use the word valid, okay?
Correct.
There are sometimes, I will freely admit this, there are sometimes significant changes between one translation or another and sometimes on a key word. So therefore, if you rely on the reading of the bad translation, could you come to an incorrect conclusion? Yes, you could. How would you prevent it? The same way you prevent any error. You pray to God, and you say to God, I'm going to read the Bible now. If I'm going to come across anything that's wrong, you prevent me from coming to the wrong conclusion, please, because I cannot rely on men alone. And God will either do it himself, provide a guardian angel, the Blessed Mother, or someone like me. You'll be in touch with someone like me, and that person will provide the correct information. Again, he who seeks the truth finds it. God is never, ever, ever bound by the evil, sinful inclinations of men or by the limitations of man. So a bad translation of the Bible, and there are some, I freely admit, will never, never, never cause a man to believe incorrectly unless he wills to believe incorrectly.
Caller, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Hi, Pat and Vin. I am a weak female Protestant calling in with a question.
Sure, but at least you're a woman, okay?
Oh, is that
right?
And
you should behave like a woman, not like these guys who behave like women. Go ahead.
I had a question. There's a scripture, and of course, as a Protestant, I can't seem to find it, but I do.
That's all right.
Since you know the Bible so well, you'll probably back me up on it. Jesus says, do not call anyone on earth your father.
Yes.
Why then do in the Catholic Church that they can call the priest father?
Because it's the right and righteous thing to do. Now, before I answer that question, let me ask you something. This is a gimmick I use on occasion. If I can show you from the Bible
that what I've just said is true. Will you now accept it as true, and will you now accept that the people who taught you otherwise taught you error? I'm asking you to make a commitment to truth in advance. Are you willing to do it?
Sure.
It's a very good point. You're not willing to do it, are you?
I said sure.
You're willing. So then you will be willing to say to the next time a minister says this, you won't have to do it publicly because you're a woman and don't expect to. Next time a minister or some other Protestant says this to you, you'll take them aside privately, you'll admonish them, and you'll say you're utterly wrong, won't you?
Well, see, the thing is...
No, answer my question. You will do that, right?
No, not based on what you tell me, because...
No, but if it, I didn't say what I tell you. Didn't I say if it is in the Bible?
And I need to take that literally, then?
No, if it is in the Bible, if I can prove it to you from the Bible, you will accept that the Catholics are right and the Protestants are wrong on this.
Sure, Ben. We only live once. Why not?
Okay. I hope you're being serious. You might be patronizing.
I have tricks up my sleeve, too, Ben.
Okay, but I think you're just being patronizing and dishonest. But for the purposes of education, you're a Protestant. You can't help but be dishonest. Okay. But for the purposes of education and for the purposes of getting across, I read from Acts chapter 7, St. Stephen the deacon, who was later martyred and received into heaven. Ready?
Okay.
The high priest asked whether the charges are true. To this, Stephen replied, "My brothers, fathers, listen to me." He referred to the living priest and Sanhedrin as fathers. So did St. Paul do the same thing.
Are they the only ones that were there?
I beg your pardon?
Are the Sanhedrin the only ones that were in Stephen's presence?
I don't know. Well, there probably were guards and other people. But the point...
Possibly, then there could have been his fathers or his father's fathers or some elderly relation to him.
Oh, I see what you're... But the point is...
Possibly.
No problem. Okay. But he's still referring to living human beings as father, isn't he?
Certainly.
And there's nothing wrong with referring to living human beings as fathers, is there?
No.
So therefore, I won my point and you'll have to admonish a minister, won't you? And therefore, Jesus...
I never heard
it
from a minister, Vin.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
I never heard that from a minister.
Okay, well, then the next person who says it, or the next person you read, you'll write a letter because you got a commitment to truth. Come on, it'll get you a cooler place in hell. But the point is this. When Jesus says, call no man on earth your father, he doesn't mean it literally then, does he?
Right?
Or St. Stephen would not do it in the same Bible, right? Hello?
Could be.
Not could be. This lets you yes be yes, your no be no, anything else is from Satan.
Then if life was all yes and no, it'd be so much easier.
Wait a minute. Life all is yes or no, or you don't follow Christ, but you're not a Catholic, so you don't. I understand that. For God's sakes, commit yourself to the truth, and everything becomes yes or no. Everything is black or white. Everything is absolutely right or absolutely wrong. That is the nature of good and evil. It is the nature of the incarnation. It is the nature of truth. 2 + 2 = 4, always.
And... it's really hard to relate to someone like you at times because you're so defensive, and in your own eyes, you're definitely right. And
in God's eyes, I'm definitely right.
Well, let's hope so, right?
No, we don't have but thank you. I appreciate it. That's a good statement, and it's always a good one. We should always hope well, and that's why I live in Hopewell Junction. But the point is, what I just said to you was an absolute proof of an absolute Catholic policy, and it absolutely is correct, and now you're absolutely obligated to go and do something about it, and thanks for the call.
I don't have a problem with you calling your priest father. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, fine.
One other question?
Sure.
When it talked about, the one caller called in, and he talked about, he said that you said that Mary had been a virgin her whole life.
Remains a virgin, yes. Correct.
In Matthew chapter 1, verse 25, they're referring to Joseph, and it says, and he kept her a virgin until she gave birth to a son.
Yes.
And he called his name Jesus.
Yes. What's the point?
Well, the word until.
The word until, yes. What's the point?
I think she's implying that meant only until then and that afterwards.
She's not implying anything. That's not an implication.
Well,
listen.
Well, it's just...
Listen,
until that means something changed.
No, it doesn't.
After the birth of Christ.
No, it doesn't.
Why not?
Listen, until last Thursday, I never had sex with you, right? Right? Excuse me, I'd like an answer to the question. Is that a correct statement?
I hope it's accurate, Ben, for your sake and for hers.
We never had sex together.
How do you take that?
Excuse me, until last Thursday, you never cheated on your husband, did you?
No, I'm
no,
not.
No, no.
So
you did cheat on your husband before last Thursday?
Last Thursday, that's what that implies.
No, it doesn't imply anything. You should really understand the concepts of implication. Implication means that you can draw a valid conclusion from a previous statement.
Well,
if I say, let me finish my point.
Okay.
If I say you are a mother
that can conclude that you have children. That's an implication that can follow. If I say you are a woman, I can draw no conclusion about you being a mother. If I say you're a mother, I can also conclude the other, imply that you are a woman. If I say that until 1957 you had no children, that means nothing at what happened after 1957. All it says is up until that point. To say anything else otherwise is a complete and utter falsehood. And that's why I use the analogy.
Right,
you're not talking about implications. You're not talking about the loser inference. You have to look them up. And the point is, you can say until the day he died, until the day before he died, St. Joseph had no relations with the Blessed Mother. Absolutely correct. It doesn't mean to say that he then did. That is a completely false use of logic, of language, of meaning, of truth, of implication, of inference, and validity.
Well, Vin, you know I'm guilty, too, because I fell into the trap. We need to pause on that note. Caller, thanks for your comments, your questions, and we'll be back with more from Vin Lewis right after this.
Your home for the Pittsburgh Pirates is the number...
Why not make it Sarah's for lunch today?
The Right Way with Pat Campbell.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen, with the insurmountable Vin Lewis. Your call is coming for Vin in the order to receive at 835-1330. And during the commercial break, Vin has graciously agreed to remain around until 1130. Don't forget, after 1130, we're going to have Service Line, a Thursday edition. My guest in studio will be Joy Sweeting, the administrator of Health Place, from Blue Cross of Northwestern Pennsylvania. That's at 11:30 today. We're going to be talking about some upcoming events that they have planned for the We Love Erie Days. Vin, let's go back to the phone. Thanks for waiting. You're on Flagship.
Oh, hello.
How are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to know if he thinks he knows what happened to the people that was born before Christ when our civilization has been here for millions of years.
That didn't have a chance to hear the gospel?
Well, they didn't have a chance to hear nothing.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good question, Vin.
What happened?
People who died before the crucifixion, is that what you mean?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, those people who lived a righteous life according to the law written on their heart as recorded in the Epistle to the Romans went to a place called Limbo, the Limbo of the Just, and they remained there until the gates of heaven were open, and at that point they were given an opportunity for salvation, that is, entry into heaven. They were not sent to hell unless they committed a serious, grievous sin and refuse to repent.
You mean they were in limbo for all those millions of years until Christ was born?
Well,
well,
hold on. People haven't been around
years,
for millions
so no.
of years. Yeah.
No, they were on there for about 4,000 years at most.
Oh, I was looking at some of the programs, and they say that people have been on this earth longer than 4,000 years.
Yeah, I know. And some of the programs will tell you Bill Clinton's honest and he doesn't cheat on his wife. You got to watch that stuff.
And now another question I want to know. I don't believe what you just said.
Okay.
And another question I want to know is, what authority do you have to talk for the Catholic Church?
Oh, I'm not really sure if I talk for the Catholic Church. I defend the Catholic Church. Okay?
For the Bible, I mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. That's different. Oh, I'm a man who submits his will to the will of God, and therefore I speak with a self-evident righteousness. And what I do is I do what everybody says, what everybody should do, is I ask you to test me endlessly. I have debated publicly or in one form or another approximately 750 times. My record is 750-0. And so therefore, just like with Elijah and the priest of Baal, as I'm willing to do, I'm willing to test my standard, my activity, my righteousness on these matters, not my personal righteousness, which is horrible, but my ability to tell the truth. Remember, Jesus speaks through us. The Holy Spirit convicts us. As Jesus says, whatever you ask for in my name, ask and it will be yours. I have asked for this ability, as everybody should, a commitment to the truth, and then anybody could speak with exactly the same authority, righteousness, and validity that I do.
Well, I mean, if you think you have that much authority, why hasn't the Catholic Church brought you into the Catholic Church to have you speak for them?
Because God has blessed me by preventing me from having such a status, which I would hate.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. No. Let me explain something to you. I very much desire success, and I very much enjoy what I do, and I'm very happy when people approve of me. But to have an official status in which I would be on public forums and known by millions of people would be, to me, an utter disaster.
I would find that overwhelming. I would not be able to appear on talk shows like this. I would not be able to take the personal telephone calls I do. I would not be able to deal with the circle of friends that I have. All of the friends who like me now because, and I know they like me, because I'm poor and because I have no status and I have no ability to give them favors. If I were to become the official spokesman for the Catholic Church in America, then I would have the same problems everybody else does, of people toadying up to you. I'd have to wear a shirt and a tie. I'd have to go to power lunches. I'd have secretaries and stuff like that. My God, I say it, my God has blessed me by preventing that from me. Fame and that type of public adulation is not only damning, it's a curse.
Well, I don't believe what you say. So I'll just hang up on that.
Okay.
I thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on Flagship.
Good morning. I want to ask a question, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Okay.
You've mentioned how many people you've debated on this and so on. Have you debated any noted scholars? And if so, how did that go?
No, but stay on the line.
Huh?
No, I tried to, but they're cowards and they run away, specifically James White and Dave Hunt, although something supposedly is in the works with Dave Hunt. You understand that those Protestants will only debate what they consider weak Catholics, and there are an awful lot of weak Catholics out there. They will not take me on. They're afraid.
Well, see, this is my question. Are you only debating lay persons, or are you debating...
Oh, I see what you mean. Sometimes ministers, sometimes lay people. I'll take anybody on if we can come to a mutual agreement on time and place.
Well, yeah, but, you know, with a lay person, you definitely have them at a disadvantage.
I have everybody at a disadvantage.
Well, hold on a minute. Now, why would they be at a disadvantage? Because Vin is a lay person. He is not a priest. He is not a cleric.
But he is a well-schooled lay person.
Are you saying that there's no well-schooled lay Protestants out there?
No, and I deny the fact I'm well-schooled. I deny that completely.
Well, you're evidently taught...
Let me give you one of the conditions, okay? And if you wish to do it, do it. Here's the deal, okay? And then you can come back on, say, 6 months from now and verify that this is a fact. You can set up a debate with me, but don't tell me the topic. Don't tell me the topic. You get the other guys to work like the devil on it, okay? Literally like the devil. And then bring me in and tell me the topic when I appear and give me a King James version of the Bible only, and I can't resort to anything else. And I don't care whether it's indulgences, burning heretics at the stakes, perpetual virginity to Blessed Mother, Immaculate Conception. I will win or I will abandon the Church of Rome on the spot. I will win or I will abandon the Church of Rome on the spot with no preparation whatsoever. I run a hotline, which means I have people call me up to ask for advice on this. I don't screen the calls, and I never get back to people. I never fail to give an immediate answer for the truth, because that's exactly what Jesus promised in the Gospels of St. Mark, St. Matthew, and St. Luke. The point is, I simply rely on the divine power, and that's why schooling has absolutely nothing to do with it. And I will take on a panel of big-name Protestants. If you think you can set it up, please do so. But understand what's going to happen. You're going to talk to these people, and they're first going to say, oh, yes, I could beat that guy. And then they're going to work on it and work on it and work on it, and then they're going to weasel out, all of them.
Well,
challenge me. Take me up on it.
Well, see, you're misunderstanding me. You're throwing the gauntlet down before me. That wasn't the purpose of my call. The purpose of my call was to find out, you know, if you had...
I've tried without success. How's that for an answer?
Okay, without success. Because most people have just a surface or a superficial...
Of course. But the point is, I always ask them, and I'll repeat it now, I ask you as a general rule, I'm not sure if I did it in every single case, you call on your God, I'll call on mine, and whichever one is upheld is, obviously, has to be the one the real God is supporting. So therefore, it doesn't matter at all whether one is well-schooled, can speak Koine Greek, Hebrew, Aramaic, or knows the Bible inside or out, or knows nothing. Because God doesn't really care about those things, and it doesn't matter. Who's ever right will triumph, and whoever doesn't right will fail. And that's why I always triumph. And the point is, I'm a layperson, but understand also by the same token, it doesn't matter how much earthly knowledge you have, Jesus has rejected the earthly wise and accepted the foolish and rejected and the poor of the world to make them the bearers of his truth.
Well, sure, because everything is supposed to be through faith with him.
Exactly. So if they have the right faith, they'll win. If I have the right faith, I win. I always win.
Although, you are saying this, but you have to have had some kind of schooling.
No.
Excuse me. Maybe I'm using the wrong term.
What's your educational background, Vin, for the call?
That's the only question I dodge. But the point I do say is this. I've received no, I repeat, no formal training in apologetics whatsoever.
Before you got into this, I know you were a state trooper.
That's right.
Do you have a college education?
That's the only question I dodge.
then how do you come up with your interpretations? I mean, there
By
has
God.
To be some background here.
From God. No need for background.
God, when God created Adam, he didn't do the evolutionary bit of let's start with a monkey, let's start with a protozoa, let's start with an aardvark. He created man out of inanimate matter by breathing the soul into him.
Gentlemen, I hate to do this at this point because it's just getting good again. We got to wrap things up this hour. The good news is Vin Lewis will be with us for an additional half hour. The phone number here, 835-1330. Cellular One user star 1330. And fax is coming at 835-8395. Back with more Vin after the news.
The Right Way with Pat Campbell.
Welcome back, folks, as we kick off hour number three of this, a fabulous Thursday edition of The Right Way. Again, my guest joining me this morning, a man who I like to bill as the ultimate Catholic, Mr. Vin Lewis out of Hopewell, New York, former state trooper, now staunch defender of the Catholic Church. He will defend any Catholic Church teaching from a biblical perspective, and anybody that can trip him up, why, he'll abandon his faith right there on the spot and assume the faith of anybody that's quick enough, bright enough to stump him out there. I do want to once again give the disclaimer for management around here. The views being expressed on today's program are those of the guests and not necessarily those of management and or the host of the program, although I'm sure that Vin believes they should be. Anybody interested in finding out more about Vin or taking him on off air, his phone number, for your information, area code 914-226-4172. Once again, 914-226-4172. Vin, before we go back to the phones here, quick question. Why can't we have female priests in the Catholic Church?
Oh, 1,000 reasons, but the primary one is it would make women unhappy, and Jesus, being man, as well as God, as every real man does, prefers women to men. So, therefore, he favors women. The nature of women is to constantly change. All women always like to be changing their hair and changing their clothes and changing everything they can and changing the furniture around and changing the colors of their cars and all of that stuff. We men sort of put up with it, but that's what makes women happy. The nature of truth is that it is unchanging. The nature of truth is to conserve, preserve, and pass on without addition. Women don't like to ever do that. They always like to vary the recipes they read in books. So therefore, since the nature of a priest, among other things, is ultimately to become a cardinal or a pope or a bishop and to pass on the teachings of the church, this would be unnatural for women. So therefore, God, when he created women, knew this, put them in a role that would make them happy and put us men in a role that would make us happy. But the reason women can't be priests, it would make them miserable.
Fair enough.
God wants us to be happy on earth as well as in heaven.
Fair enough. Let's go to the phone.
Okay, hold on 1 minute.
Sure, go right ahead.
I want to follow up on a couple of calls, just a couple of brief comments. The last lady about me being have some kind of official position is an old expression in the church that once a man becomes a bishop, two things happen. He never again has a bad meal. He never again hears the truth. I think that would happen to any official Catholic, and I'd rather continue to eat badly and hear the truth. Another point on the whole bit of education, although my all of the organizational stuff that we teach, and we now put out, I guess, probably about 300 different titles on how to defend and explain and spread the faith and to be apologetic and defensive and to present things logically, I clearly point out that in a very real sense, we're a fraud. All you can do is, if you ever want to become as skilled as I am, you don't need any schooling. All you need is God. Just ask the gift from God. And if it's proper for you to be so, he will give it. And one last point.
And I'm afraid we're out of tape, so that one last point, if you really want to know what it is, you'll have to get the next tape in this series, which is on the air, tape 97, I think. At any rate, you can just look at the number on this tape and add one, and that'll be the next one, where the rest of the Pat Campbell Show will continue and finish, and also my interview by a Protestant radio station will be on the other side of the next tape. And you can obtain copies of that tape or this tape by writing us at ARM 55 Palin Road, number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. Thanks for listening. Hope tape's been enjoyable. Hope you've been entertained and that you've learned something that'll be beneficial for your salvation as well as mine. Thanks for listening. God bless.